Morning, honourable members and the visitors. The South African Maritime Safety Authority and the delegation from Robben Island. They have just asked us to give them just for a few minutes because they are still waiting for the chairperson of the board. I'm told he's already in parliamentary precinct, but he's lost coming to this place. So I said they must ask the protection service people to assist him to the venue. Honourable members, this meeting we intended to just to do two things. One, to look at the BRRR report of the committee, and then secondly, we received two presentations, one from the Robben Island Museum and two from the South African Maritime Safety Authority. So those two entities already, they have confirmed their attendance. They are already here. A SAMHSA delegation is sitting on that side. I've also put in just on your desk, honorable members, the delegation, who are they? SAMHSA, the name I received yesterday was only one. Okay, I will come around it just to take the other names of the two people who have come. But for now, before we can do anything, honourable members, Chairperson on Tuesday, she received a call from home that he has to go back home because her house was severely affected by that storm that happened in KZN. I'm sure we've all seen that in the news and in the social media. Unfortunately, her house was also affected in that. So she had to ask for a leave. And then she left on Tuesday or Wednesday morning. So she went back to KZN. So that's why she is not around, the honourable members. So she has tendered her apology. Now, in terms of rules, I would then suggest, honourable members, so that we can nominate a member amongst us who can preside over the proceedings of today's sitting. On that note, I want to call honourable members any nomination so that we can have a meeting starting so that we don't have wasted much of the time. Ma'am, honourable Mama Sahela.
Members, flu. My voice is not okay today. I nominate the name of honourable Kwekwa to chair the meeting for today. Thank you.
Mamutreko, you are nominated to chair the meeting. Is there any seconder? Mayor Adams?
Thank you, Chair. I'm seconding the nomination.
Mamutreko, your name has been nominated and seconded. Can I ask you to come forward, Mayor, to preside over the proceedings of this meeting for today. Thank you. Oh, I didn't see any hand that was interested.
Good morning, everyone. Let me apologize for Jerry for not inviting another name to be considered. Nonetheless, it was a majority view. On that note, let me welcome everyone who's here in the house. I will be caretaking for today, since Jerry has tendered an apology for the chairperson. On that note, I will invite the secretary of the committee if there are any other apologies, so that we take care of apologies as per the agenda. Thank you.
Thank you, Ma. The apologies that we have, it's for one, for the chairperson, two, Honorable Makubele Mashele, and Honorable Begwa. Those are the apologies that we have, Ma. Thank you.
Chair, and then Honorable Krumbok will be joining us a little bit later.
Thank you very much. I would advise the committee to note the apologies. On that note, we have the agenda in front of us. We are done with the apologies. We are done with the election of the chair. We are now to consider our report. And the approach that I am to advise on is that we give our conduct advisor, Sibusiso, just to lift up anything that will take us to the recommendations that are at the back of the BRRR. Is that fine with you, Honorable Members? I see that you are nodding. Can I give 10 minutes to you, Sibusiso?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, members, and our delegation here today. Chairperson, I don't think I have to go through the entire report as you have indicated. Most of the issues contained in the report are matters that have been processed by the committee through our quarterly report hearings and the annual report. So as the chair has suggested, I'll just leave a few things that will lead to recommendations. If I can direct members to page 11, where we have the financial performance. Members will recall in the period under review, the department was appropriated 2 billion and they were able to spend 1.9 billion, which is 85.5% of their appropriated budget. The details in terms of program performance are in the report in terms of how much of that was spent by each program. In the interest of time, I will then direct members to page 18. Page 18 contains the Auditor General report. The department in the current financial year, they received a clean audit opinion from the Office of the Auditor General. There were no other matters raised by the AG in the period under review. And members will recall that in the previous financial year, there were issues in terms of leadership and other matters that were raised. So the clean audit is the second one because last year they also received a clean audit. On page 20, that is now the overview and assessment of their service delivery performance, which is a program performance. The department had four programs: Program 1, Administration; Program 2, Police and Knowledge Services; Program 3, International Tourism; and program for domestic tourism. In total, they had 64 targets they were pursuing in the period under review. Of those 64, they were able to achieve 55, and 9 were not achieved. So the overall performance was 85.8%, and 85.8%, and percentage not achieved was 14.2%. And members will recall when we were dealing with the annual report, projects that were not achieved pertained to delays with regard to environmental impact assessments that were not finalized on time. And also, we had projects that were not attained with regard to social responsibility implementation, which is the EPW program of the committee. And the department had indicated there was a GTEC process underway to ensure that they clean up the database so that moving forward we can have a clean list. And that led to non-achievement in terms of the full-time equivalent jobs. On page 34, honorable members, now we are looking at other matters which are external to the department in terms of other reports, in terms of how we are performing as a tourism sector in South Africa. So firstly, we looked at the state of tourism report, which was developed by the department, and the report indicates that the tourism sector is currently in a good state. We have come out of the decline that we incurred due to the 2014-15 immigration regulation. So the sector is picking up. 10 million visitors visited our shores, and also the expenditure of tourists in the country has increased. On page 36, we are looking at another report, the Global Competitiveness Report 2017-2018, which ranks 137 countries in terms of their global competitive. This one is included here because it has direct impact on tourism. If the competitiveness of the country decreases and there are matters that have led to that decline of our ranking, because we declined by 14 spaces from the previous ranking, we had 47 before, now we are 61, and there are three main issues that are raised there that have led to that decline, and those are important for the country, which means moving forward, SAT, working with brand SA. I think they'll have to work hard on that, because it has to do with destination brand, and if our brand declines, then arrivals might also be affected. Then the last issue are looking. Then we also looked at the OECD trends and policies in terms of what are the current issues internationally. So what we picked up here is the issue of the sharing economy, the disruptive industries, particularly your Uber and Airbnb, which are really affecting the tourism sector in South Africa, and that has policy and regulatory implications for the National Department of Tourism, because they have to make sure that at least Airbnb, because if it is left unchecked, then the issue of quality assurance within the destination is affected. So members will recall the matter was raised during the annual report, and the DG said the issue is being looked at in their review of the current legislation. Then the last one is the Travel and Tourism Competitors Report that looks at traveling and tourism trends internationally. And also that one is included here to ensure that South African Tourism and the department, they look at all those factors, because There you have issues of environmental sustainability, issues of safety and security, issues of universal accessibility that needs to be attended to. Then on page 39, that is where now, I think in terms of what the chairperson was saying, we have to zoom into the observations now, the key findings of the committee. So there are technical issues that we looked at in terms of the PFMA and also the service delivery issues. On technical issues, under expenditure, in the period under review, the department incurred 89.9 million under expenditure, and they also requested a rollover of that amount in 9.1.3 at the bottom of the page there. But we were informed by the CFO that National Treasury declined to issue that rollover, which then is a concern because it means now they have to reprioritize their budget in terms of funding the projects that were already committed in the previous financial year. There were also issues of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and there I think members will note that the department improved tremendously because in the previous financial year they were sitting at around almost a million. They were at 934,000, if I'm not mistaken, of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. From 900,000, they only incurred 60,000 in the period under review. But that is still a concern because those have to do with traveling. So it has to do with planning their traveling on time and ensure that there are no unnecessary cancellations. On page 40, there were no governance and operational issues, as I alluded earlier, that all the issues that were raised even by the AG in the previous financial year had been sufficiently dealt with in the period under review. Now, service delivery, performance, these are the issues that pertain to the activities of the department directly and those that are cross functions between the department and others. Firstly, the issue of poorly implemented projects is one observation there, and the issue of GTEC, as was alluded to say, the department is busy with cleaning up the database so that we have a clean bill of health in terms of the projects that are taken moving forward. Operational support for community tourism businesses, this is an issue that was observed on oversight, where you have the department supporting other businesses with operational support and others are not supported. The case in point will be the Nehakwe and Kalanga in our recent oversight to Limpopo, to say you can't have a situation where you are supporting other communities and you are not supporting others. Grading of tourism establishment, the trend is that there is a decline in graded establishments, and the concern is even those that are not renewing, they continue to use the grading plaques as they are not dated. So that is an issue because there is no legislative framework. So how do you deal with that? So the issue remains there for South African Tourism and the and South African Grading Council to ensure that the issue of grading is addressed. Lack of provincial tourism master plans, as members saw in a number of oversight visits, that you don't have a policy and strategy alignment between the national department and provinces and some of the municipalities, and provinces therefore have to develop their tourism master plans to ensure that there is alignment. There is an issue with poor planning and coordination at a municipal level. There are still municipalities out there who still consider tourism as an unfunded mandate. They don't even have tourism staff who are solely responsible for tourism, which then creates that gap in terms of implementation of the national and provincial programs. Poor signage is continuing. The matter that has been raised also in the previous financial year, so we still have poor signage, particularly to the iconic national and international sites. The committee will recall that we saw a best practice in one of the provinces where they are working closely with SANRAL, and maybe the National Department of Tourism has to look at that past best practice to see if they can assist other provinces. Neglect of universal access. Most of tourism facilities in the country are still not universally accessible. I think the committee experienced this firsthand as the chairperson, even when we worked to some of the hotels and some of the public spaces could not get in because there was no access. Poor ELIF strategy is still a problem. You have best practices in terms of the cities and provinces, such as Western Cape, Durban, and Gauteng, where you have good ELIF, but other provinces and cities, really, that there is a shortage of, I think, skilled people to deal with this. That is why the matter has to be dealt with maybe at a national level to ensure that you have a good ELIF strategy, because this has to do with issues of geographical spread that the members have always talked about. Then issues of business and event strategies. You have other cities that do not even have business units. It means they cannot bid for events. So you have a complaint, other cities saying the National Convention Bureau is not supporting them. But when you go down on the ground, find that at a provincial level, the marketing authority does not have a business unit, which then makes it difficult to assist them. Also, events are not quite, you don't have a national events calendar that will tell you what is happening where in the country. Underdeveloped township tourism and homestays is another matter that was observed to say, as much as the department is supporting homestays in other provinces, but this is a potential that has not been fully unlocked. And also, the issue of township tourism, there's potential in a number of townships, and that is not harnessed. Poor maintenance and access of tourist attractions. So there is an issue with the maintenance of attractions themselves, and also access. The roads to these attractions is terrible, full of potholes, even to the international sites, such as the Mapungubwe in Limpopo, where the roads cannot be traversed easily. So that remains a challenge for the not just the National Department of Tourism, but it needs coordination with Department of Transport and other stakeholders in the province. Also, the issue of niche tourism development, where there are opportunities that are not harnessed in religious tourism, in heritage tourism, cultural tourism, and other forms of tourism which can assist with transformation. The issue of transformation itself, the committee has observed that transformation in the sector remains a problem. And you'll recall earlier in the year, the committee had a hearing with the BE Charter Council, and the challenge there was there is no plan or a coordinated strategy. So how are they going to ensure there's transformation in the sector? There is another issue that has to do with natural disasters and safety and security of tourists in the country. The sector has been recently affected by natural disaster. The recent fell fires in Naizna, the recent incident even in Durban, which says there must be a coordinated strategy to say how do we deal with those events. Also, the issues of safety and security. There are increasing incidents of mugging of tourists, particularly from OR Tambo. I just heard in the news this morning that even last night there was a mugging of about seven tourists, the same modus operandi like it happened with the 36 Dutch tourists. Meaning there must be a coordinated strategy to say, as a sector, how do we deal with this issue? Destination branding remains a challenge where some provinces really do not have good branding or marketing strategies. They have routes that are not based on any theme, and they are not also aligned to the national branding. Conversion for domestic tourism is another issue there. So domestic tourism is declining, but those provinces which have high numbers in domestic tourism, a high percentage of that is on visiting friends and relatives, and those are not spending. So then there should be conversion strategies to ensure that you convert VFR into leisure tourists. The issue of disruptive technologies that we alluded to earlier, to say there are increasing numbers of people who are marked using Uber. There are issues of Airbnb quality assurance where people go to these ungraded establishments, and that tarnishes the destination image. So those are the issues on which the findings, on which the recommendations are based. Before we go to the recommendations, there are now funding proposals. Now, to say with everything that the committee has dealt with in the period under review, what are then the funding proposals? The first funding proposal has to do with the marketing investment framework. The committee commissioned South African Tourism to conduct a study to ensure that we make informed proposals to National Treasury in terms of budget increase, because the entity faces challenges, including foreign exposure in terms of their budget. So they came up with the marketing investment framework that proposes three scenarios. And those scenarios are on page 48, second paragraph there, to say the first scenario is that if there is an increase of about 240 million, that will result to an additional 355,000 arrivals and tourism revenue of 6.3 billion. The second scenario is that if there is an increase to 2.6, because currently we are sitting at 2 billion, if there's an increase to 2.6 billion, that will bring 11 million passengers, and then that will also culminate to bigger revenues. And also the third one is that if there's a budget increase of 850 million, now they're looking at the number of graded rooms in the country, if you increase budget by 850 million, that will fill the 19.7 graded rooms and generate a projected 37 billion in additional tourism revenue. So that is the first funding proposal that the committee is making to the National Treasury, to look at those three scenarios and make a determination. The second one is on the capitalization of government-owned tourism products. The committee has been talking about these municipal-owned resorts, which are all over the country, and the department then commissioned a study with IDC to look at all these facilities. They came up with a number of 700, to say we have 700 state-owned tourism facilities throughout the country, but there is no money to recapitalize them to be usable by tourists. So the funding proposal, therefore, is for the National Treasury to provide funding, which can be even a ring-fenced budget, just to ensure that we get those government-owned tourism enterprises into a functioning state, which will then address issues of transformation as well. The third funding proposal is the capitalization of the transformation fund. The committee will recall in the previous financial year, a recommendation was made to the department to establish a tourism development fund. So instead of establishing a tourism development fund, the current minister established what is called the tourism transformation fund. And that fund sits at 120 million currently, but that money really is too little to assist a transformation for emerging enterprises. And then the funding proposal to the National Treasury is that transformation fund is also capitalized to ensure that you can have a fund. So they are working with the National Empowerment Fund in terms of equity. So it's a good model that they are using. I think National Treasury, when they look at the model, maybe they they can see value in capitalizing the transformation fund. So in terms of the funding proposals that the committee, which is, I think, important, Chairperson, for the BRRR, those are the three funding proposals. Now, the recommendations, I'll just skim through because recommendations have to do with everything that we have said. So they are divided into two. On page 49, we have recommendations to the Minister of Finance. So the recommendations to the Minister of Finance has to do with those three budget proposals. The first one is that he considers the tourism marketing investment framework that was developed by SAT and appropriate additional budget for both international and domestic marketing activities. The second one is that additional budget is appropriated to Vote 33 to capitalize the government-owned tourism products. The third one is that the transformation fund is also capitalized to ensure that you have enough funding to assist with transformation of the sector. On page 50, now these are the recommendations of the Minister of Tourism. Basically, these have to do with service delivery issues. The 10.4 continues from the 10.3 recommendations to the Minister of Finance. 10.4 is for the Minister now of Tourism to ensure that they manage their budget accordingly to avoid under expenditure and the unguaranteed request for rollover. This has to do with what they incurred in the current in the period under review. Also, that there's improvement in planning for traveling arrangements within the department so that you don't incur that fruitless expenditure based on uncoordinated traveling arrangements. The 10.7 looks at operational support to say the minister must ensure that all the projects that are constructed by the department are also funded with operational support so that you don't spend public funds on projects that will remain a white elephant. The case in point, as I mentioned earlier, will be the Kalanga lot that members just saw a few weeks ago, where $43 million was spent on the project, but the project is unoperational because they say they cannot operate it. Then, with the issues of tourism master plans, is for the minister to work with the MECs in provinces to ensure that master plans are developed. 10.9 has to do with prioritization of tourism at local level, where the minister, through MINMEC, has to work through the MECs to ensure that tourism is adequately budgeted for and there's appointment of dedicated staff at local level. Tourism signage, where the minister has to find a solution to tourism signage, particularly for tourism attractions and other sites, and also improvement of road infrastructure to tourism attractions throughout the country. The one on the Business Council has to ensure that the Tourism Business Council improves universal accessibility in their facilities, and particularly for the department to ensure that all the projects they implement are universally accessible. So this one is a lobby exercise that the department needs to do with the private sector to because this is not just an accessibility issue. It's a business issue, because if you have a family member who is disabled, it means the whole family that would have booked would move elsewhere because you don't have a room that can accommodate such a tourist. With regard to the airlift strategies, it's also here because the issue is at a provincial and local level. It's for the minister to work with the MECs to ensure that they develop airlift strategies. But this is an issue, members will recall, that sits with the Department of Transport, because the airlift at a national level is a responsibility of the Department of Transport. But cities have developed their own, and we have seen it happening. That is why the recommendation is for the Minister of Tourism to see if can't work with other MECs to ensure that you have development of such airlift strategies. And the events calendar is the issue of ensuring that you have a well-coordinated and interactive events. Interactive in a sense that you must have a booking engine in that website. If people want to go to a particular event, it mustn't just be the announcement of an event, but there must be booking mechanism within the site so that people can be able to make bookings online. Then on domestic tourism strategy, we are saying that the issue of niche tourism is already in the domestic tourism strategy, but is for the minister to ensure that you activate the NTSS and the domestic tourism strategy to ensure that you deal with issues of township tourism and homestays. And also the issue that is 10.16 now of the BE Charter Council is for the BE Charter Council to develop a credible implementation plan, because really what they presented to the committee was not a plan. So it's for them to develop a credible implementation plan to ensure that you have programs to advance transformation in this sector. Uh, 1019, that has to do with VFR, there is to ensure that you have conversion mechanisms. SAT, South African Tourism, has to assist provincial agencies and cities to ensure that they have conversion strategies to ensure that people who are in VFR are converted into leisure tourists. And the regulatory framework, which is the last one there, is for the department to consider developing a policy and regulatory framework for disruptive technologies to ensure quality assurance and safety of tourists in the country. So this is not to say this should be taken off the market, but it's for them to operate in a manner that will be safe for tourists. So those are the proposals, funding proposals and recommendations, Chairperson. So we will welcome any additions from the members.
Thank you, Sibusiso Khuzwayo. Let me welcome you, Honorable Khumbok, and also the delegation from Robben Island that has just joined us. Your apology was tendered, Honorable Member. We are now at that stage. There's the report, and the report is informed by the quarterly reports by the department, the annual reports, and also the reports from the oversight visits that we conduct as a committee. Members, there you are. Are there any additions? Are there any corrections? Can we say this is the report? Let me start with you. Can I note the hands? Okay. Let me start with on that side, Honorable Kaula, and come to the side. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, mine is actually, I think it's 3 points that I want to raise. I see on I think it's on page 40, yeah, it's page 41, there's a reflection on the grading of tourism establishment, which basically refers to establishments that cancel their, in fact, that do not renew, but still continue as per the originally granted grading, you see, without renewing it. One, obviously, that cannot be termed with anything else other than corruption, because basically it's misrepresentation if it has not been renewed. And therefore, you're misrepresenting the tourist, and it is misrepresenting also the council. I think the council must have be able to do something. But further on that, which is not reflected here, on the grading issue, I think we have raised this thing a number of occasions. The concern has been, which has been coming forth, is that the grading council, there is lack of transparency and transformation from it, which has not been lifted here. And also we have been calling for the maximization of access from especially for rural establishments and township establishment. The reality is this: majority of those rural establishments, for some reason, they are not graded, and for political reasons. And the argument has been that it should be the role of the grading council to ensure that it accelerates its accessibility, and further it assists the rural areas and the rural establishment to ensure that they are able to access grading. And it is my view that without, it has not been mentioned in the report, but one can only draw one conclusion that those that have not renewed their grading are mainstream establishments. They are mainstream establishment, which is basically those that remains untransformed, and they must be chased. They must not be given. They must not be treated with kids' glove. You see. So, and I want to make a point that in terms of recommendations, SBU, with respect, there is no recommendation that talks directly to the issue of the grading council establishment. And I don't know why, you see, and unless I have missed your points here. But if there's no recommendation, I wish to recommend that the grading council must play a role to ensure that these establishments that continue as if they are renewed, they are graded, they are chased at. And secondly, the recommendation would be that the role of the grading council to ensure that it increases access is there. The second point I want to make, which tallies with the one of, it's the lack of provincial tourism master plan and the issues of municipalities not taking interest too. I think it's an important important point which must be pursued by tourism, that there is little tourism taking place, but it happens in silos. And I think the tourism industry as a custodian, it has a responsibility to inspire provinces, to inspire municipalities to take serious interest. The last point I want to make, which is key, and I think it has found expression and on your recommendation, is the issue of underdevelopment, townships, tourism, and homestays on page 43. But I think what is key there, because I believe the whole point refers to the significance of the township economy. But what is key there is that the reality is that you can't separate in many areas. I come from Port Elizabeth. You can't separate township economy from ocean tourism, because ocean tourism, the recognition of ocean tourism will inevitably force you to consider the ocean economy. And the key important thing there from a transformation perspective is that what then becomes the role of the tourism industry to accelerate the participation of our own people from townships and rural areas in the ocean tourism and by extension to the ocean economy. And we have not seen that coming forth. And I think in many reports of tourism, it's for some reason they think that when we make the point, when we lift the point of ocean economy, it belongs or it resides to another ministry. Yet at the very same time, you want to take credit when it comes to ocean tourism. Now, the point I'm raising is that you cannot take credit in terms of ocean tourism, and you do not want to take responsibility in terms of ensuring that there's ocean economy, which in the main accelerates the participation of the black people in the townships and the rural areas. It can't be correct. So I'm saying that that is not also is not finding expression on the recommendations. And I wish to have it finding recommendations that in terms of that particular point of underdeveloped township tourism, we then give expression of ocean tourism by extension ocean economy and the participation of the people thereof in those areas. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Force.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to start with paragraph 9.4.2 on page 48, but it ties in with page 41, paragraph 9.3.6 about poor planning and coordination at the municipal level. So where the recommendation is that the committee submits to the National Treasury that this program to get off the ground, the department requires additional funding to ensure that these government properties are ready for uptake as businesses. I would like to elaborate on this point and perhaps come to a different conclusion. We know that there are more than 700 of these municipal holiday resorts that have been identified as underutilized or in a state of disrepair because of the lack of investment or management from those municipal authorities. And we've made the point previously that many municipalities are not equipped to manage these resorts optimally to the benefit of tourism, or at least do not have sufficient funding to continuously maintain such places. And therefore, the simple solution is to form public-private partnerships as per the recommendation from the Industrial Development Corporation decision, which was taken in 2013-2014, which said that a pilot project should be introduced to form these triple P's with those municipalities and develop these resorts into tourism products that will benefit those towns and those regions, and to take the financial burden off the municipalities and let the private sector manage it on behalf of those municipalities. So I don't really agree with the recommendation that we should apply for funding from the National Treasury to ensure that these properties are ready for uptake as businesses. I would rather recommend that the department, whether it's the Department of Tourism or the Department of Treasury, that we actually assist those municipalities with the formulation of council resolutions to enter into those triple P's, because my experience is that some municipalities do not have the expertise to actually formulate a council resolution to give effect to a triple P. So they're sitting with this asset, it's deteriorating, it's becoming a burden and a loss for that municipality, but they don't really have the internal mechanisms to do the necessary to actually dispose or to long lease these premises with the private sector. So I think there should actually be a capacity building or at least some assistance as part of this recommendation to those affected municipalities to assist them in doing what is necessary to enter such triple P's. So I think that should actually form part of the recommendation. Instead of just putting more money into the problem, rather let's assist those municipalities with the correct formulation of a council resolution to give effect to that. The next point is on folio page 49, paragraph 9.4.3, about transformation. The previous speaker made the point with regards to accommodation and township and oceans economy, but I would like to go one step further. Where we are setting up now a fund to assist with transformation, we should actually be very specific. What is it that we want to achieve? In the places of accommodation, or in the space of accommodation, I think there is a big opportunity for transformation. We've seen in many of our communities great potential, for example, in townships and in many other communities where we could possibly explore the homestay approach, and that would be transformation. So that from this fund, we identify accommodation as one of the sectors that we need to transform, so that it's giving an opportunity to those communities also to enter the tourism value chain and to build those businesses from the ground up. And the same applies to township tourism products that we listed as an outcome of the transformation fund. Otherwise, we're just going to set up a transformation fund to tick the boxes. I believe that we should say we want to transform the accommodation space. We want to make sure that we build many more tourism products in townships so that we list them as outcomes from the transformation fund. Then with regards to Airbnb, and that's on folio page 45. I must make the following point. I do not agree with the wording in this report to say that the committee has observed a negative impact of the recent disruptive technologies such as Uber and Airbnb. I'm not going to talk about Uber, but I'm going to talk about the Airbnb. Airbnb is a platform. It's like Bookings.com. It's like Trivago. Simply a platform And whilst it's a great addition to our tourism landscape, and yes, it could be seen as a disruptive technology, I don't see it as a negative. It's a shared economy approach. So many of these guest houses and B&Bs and so on, they should all list their premises onto Airbnb because it's simply a platform. Airbnb is not a mechanism to circumvent and bypass municipal and other regulations. It's simply a platform, and I think we must be very clear on that point. Later this month, the Western Cape government will be hosting a think tank on Airbnb to see how we integrate Airbnb within our tourism landscape. And we mustn't see it as something separate. Airbnb is a great addition, and it's a platform to serve the accommodation sector, and certainly not a way to circumvent and bypass any municipal regulations or other hospitality norms and standards. In fact, all places of accommodation should be legal in the sense of the word by having compliance with town planning and other hospitality regulations and norms and standards. So I don't agree with that point. But coming to the recommendation on this, which is on folio page 51, paragraph 10.20, considers developing a policy and regulatory framework for disruptive technologies such as Uber to ensure quality assurance. Now, with that, I do agree, but then we must say the same to all of the other platforms, Bookings.com, Lacquerslap, and the many, many other, and I just did a search quickly. There are so many of these platforms available to South Africans and international visitors to book accommodation in South Africa. But that same quality assurance should go to all of the others because they are simply platforms. And I think we need to have a discussion on that in the future before we go and say it's negative or we should have a separate approach to it. Then my last point, Madam Chair, is on the paragraph just before 10.20, which is 10.19. I fully agree that there needs to be a conversion from people who are simply traveling for visiting friends and family. By the way, the number one reason why people travel in South Africa in that category is for funerals. And if you look at South Africa's rich tourism and cultural landscape, 9 provinces, distinct in character, distinct in people, distinct in heritage and culture, 11 official languages, it's just a shame that people don't travel enough, and we need to create the reasons for people to travel. So I agree with this recommendation, but I want to go one step further. I think the time has come for us to include in our policy approach the dual pricing. We know that the big reason why South Africans don't travel, and it goes to the Robben Island Museum as well, is that it's affordability. It's very expensive for South Africans to travel in their own country, and we'll come to the Robben Island later on. But the dual pricing is something that we must explore, where we create a dual pricing system for South African citizens to pay a cheaper rate to visit many of these government-owned parks, resorts, and so on. And I think this is now the time that we include the wording dual pricing. In some tourism circles, it's a very uncomfortable term, but I think the time is right. We must, as South Africa, create that opportunity and access for South African citizens to be able to travel and deal with the affordability issue. And I think we should put it in there as a recommendation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Foss. Any hand? Okay. Honourable Masela? Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. I wanted to talk to the Great Council. Part of it has been covered already by one of the members there. But now I think we should also indicate here that our recommendation has been that if it is possible, the grading should be compulsory, come with a mechanism where we are going to be in the position to grade all the establishments because they represent South Africa and not just those individuals. And then on the issue of, I think it is on page 41, on poor planning, is 9.3.6. In your deliberations, you did indicate the issue of not having staff dedicated for tourism in municipalities, but it is not appearing here in the report. If we can also put it in the report, because you did talk about it. And also, I didn't see it here in the recommendation that we recommend that in each and every municipality we should have those staff members that are dedicated to tourism issues. I didn't see it. If it is this, fine. And also on page 33, I don't know, some of the, I think it's 33 if I'm not wrong. Is it page 33? Sorry. Number 6, let me put it that way. It's not 33. It's on number 6, item number 6. And others, not the 6 only, and others. There are many issues where I think if we used a table, some tables there, it was going to work out more understandable and easier for us than the way we are explaining it here. I don't know, but you can look into that one. That was my thinking. If you can have a table to say this is how much we budgeted for this year, how much was spent for last year, or so on and so on. It works out much easier in that way and more understandable.
Excuse me, Honourable, are you referring to page 12?
Number 6. Okay. Not 6 only, they can look into other areas. Number 6, I mean item 6. Have you seen it? Yes. And some others there. I think if we use the tables, it will be easier and better understandable. And then the issue that was raised by Honourable, yes, fourth here, about the requesting for budget, more budget for the municipalities. I think even if we can say, let them assist them to formulate a better way of their problem budget and so on, we might have still have a problem because they don't have budgets for the for tourism. That is why in most cases, they, even those people who are there in other municipalities where we have those officials, they don't, they just do nothing because there is no budget specifically for tourism. So I think we should still ask for funds so that that fund could be transferred to municipalities specifically to work on this issue. Thank you.
Those were the concerns raised. Can we get a response, a content advisor? Is there anything that you are safe to say now in response to the items raised? Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. We take the additions from members. We will effect them in the report. I think it will be better maybe if we effect them in the recommendations. On the issue of the grading, raised by Honorable Khaula. There is assistance Honorable Khaula currently provided through TIP, Tourism Incentive Program. That is the money that was transferred by the Department to South African Tourism to facilitate just what you were alluding to. But there was poor uptake. Maybe the recommendation, because from previous BRRR, the same matter was raised, so there was that transfer, but there was poor uptake. I think the recommendation will be to ensure maximization of TIP take-up on the grading assistance, so that at least the matter that we can follow as a committee to say maybe on quarterly basis they must report in terms of how many people they are assisting, because money is already there for that particular purpose. Then on the issue of also grading, but now at a policy level, it was raised by Honorable Force and Honorable Masihela. It's a matter that was raised even in the previous BRRR. And currently the department is reviewing the act, and that is the matter that the committee had referred previously, and I think members will recall when we had a meeting with SAT, they said they were looking at the matter but they could not make any pronouncement on it because it's a policy matter currently being considered by the minister. But we will include it again here because it's a matter that is very serious. Maybe to the effect that the department considers a policy shift on the grading scheme of the country from voluntary to compulsory. Because because I think that is the sentiment. But there are serious arguments for and against, but the policy debate is out there. So the committee, I think, will phrase the recommendation as such. Also, the issue of the ocean's economy, there is a strategy, Honorable Khawula, that has been finalized by the department. It's just that they haven't presented it to the committee yet. I think the member will recall that the committee, because they were excluded initially from the whole operations PAKISA, so they joined later, about 18 months later, but they've just finalized their strategy. Is it out there? They have to present it to the committee. But I think the recommendation there will be that the department ensures participation of local communities to Ashin's economy. We'll see how you phrase it, but it will be to that effect. But there is a strategy. Maybe it will be the matter of programming by U committee secretary to ensure that maybe they come with that item soonest to the committee. And the issue of the government-owned facilities, I understand what the member is saying, but I think maybe let's have it both ways. Let's have a financial recommendation, because if we just have a PPP recommendation only, you can have those institutional arrangements, but you don't have any funding now to implement. Maybe, I'm not sure, the member will direct me. We can leave the issue of that budget proposal for capitalizing it, but then as a recommendation, then say the department considers facilitating PPP arrangements for municipalities to operate government-owned facilities through council resolutions. But I think we'll have to rephrase that one, because there are two issues there. Is the issue of a council resolution, which I think is outside the purview of the minister in terms of a council resolution, but she can, through MINMEC, facilitate PPPs. So maybe if we leave it at a PPP level, to say through MINMEC, she facilitates establishment of PPP arrangements, because then she can, with MECs, then those specific municipalities deal with them, then the mayors will then facilitate the resolutions. Then the issue of dual pricing, it was raised before, but I don't think it set well with the industry at the time, but I think we can, as the member is proposing, that the department and SAT should explore a dual pricing system for South African citizens and international tourists to deal with affordability by South Africans, but we will phrase it, yeah. But I think the gist is there. I think it's better that way, because I think it's better that way. Then the issue of capacity at a local level, I think was also raised by two members, issues of staffing and budget. 10.9, maybe if I can refer members to 10.9 and see maybe if it doesn't capture well what members want to see in the report, because there it says the minister engages all members of executive councils through MINMEC to facilitate prioritization of tourism at local government level through adequate budgeting and appointment of dedicated tourism personnel and lobby for the establishment of tourism coordinating structures at all levels of government, incorporating the private sector. Because I think that one is all-encompassing, because prioritization will be everything, including budgets there. It's covered. The issue about tables is a matter that we discussed extensively. We were at how many pages, Jerry? 70. we were at 72 pages because those tables, they make the but it's fine, we can bring it back, but the report will be, because we have those things, we have put them here, but the report became too long. So I'm not sure what is the sentiment. We bring them back and have a long report, or we leave them out as this. Because we do have those tables.
Okay.
Now, I think that will be all in terms of the matters we raised, Chair.
Okay. Honorable members, what I think we must do is to just summarize what you have just proposed so that you make things easy for the people who are doing the report, so that they compare what they have, what they will be writing with what you have said in this meeting. I think that I'm going to propose time frames, but at your earliest convenience, so that we are not late in the report. Is that possible, honorable members? Thanks. On that note, what are we saying about the report with the additions that we have just made? Honorable Kaul?
Chair, I think the report is fine. I think the way SPU has captured my two views, I think I'm happy with it. The issues of that raised to the township and ownership economy and the issue on grading, Councillor, I think he has captured well.
You, a member from the Democratic Alliance, Honorable Foss?
Yes, that's fine, Madam Chair. We agree. As long as all of those things are captured, I'm happy. I propose for the adoption.
A member from Honorable Adams?
I'm happy to second the proposal that we accept and the recommendation as made here for the BRRR.
Thank you, honourable members. We can say we have adopted the report with amendments. Thank you. We are now going straight to... Okay. Yes. Briefing by Robben Island Museum. Can I take you back to what we were supposed to do in the beginning? We did not introduce ourselves. You did not introduce ourselves. Let me welcome again everybody that's been invited here, including the public, if they are here. We are going to introduce ourselves before I can give to Robben Island Museum, so that you know who you are talking to and we know who's presenting, who's doing what, who is amongst the delegation. I will start on that side with the honourable members. Thank you.
Thanks, Acting Chair. My name is Temigose Khaula, member of the EFF in the Tourism Committee. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Greg Crumbock. I'm a member of the Democratic Alliance from KwaZulu-Natal on the Tourism Committee.
Good morning. My name is James Force. I'm the DA spokesperson on tourism, and I'm from the Western Cape.
Good morning. My name is Patricia Adams, and I'm a member of the ANC on this committee.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and members. I'm Manuku Masahela, member of this committee, deployed by the African National Congress from Limpopo Province. Thank you.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Nikita Mlunguza. I am a researcher. Thank you.
Good morning, honourable members and chairperson. My name is Thabo Lesora. I'm a researcher interested in legislation, particularly to the sector, but I'm also here just to learn a bit more about the trends within tourism in our country.
I'm Lindsay Dentlinger, a journalist from Eyewitness News.
Good morning. I'm Cindy Sosa-Password, Executive Secretary for the Chairperson of this portfolio.
Let me come to the table. Next to me is Jerry Boltina, the committee secretary of the tourism committee. I am Koshila, a member of this committee, and also a tourism ambassador from the Eastern Cape province. Next to me on my side here is Sibusiso Khuzwayo, the content advisor in this tourism committee. Can I start with at the back there with the department? Can I start with the department first? Okay.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Melanie Titus. I'm the Parliamentary Liaison Officer in the Office of the Minister.
Good morning, Chair, Honourable Members, colleagues. My name is Sobhantu Dilai. I'm Chief Operating Officer at the South African Maritime Safety Authority, SAMSA.
Good morning. I'm Gustav Loof, the Regional Manager in the Western Cape for South African Maritime Safety Authority, SAMSA.
Good morning. My name is Ian Calvert. I'm an executive with the South African Maritime Safety Authority.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Mpumelelo Lale. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for Robben Island Museum.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Andresen Van Drouin. I'm the Senior Manager of Ferries for Robben Island Museum.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Bongi Wenzeku. I'm the Acting Senior Manager for Tourism and Marketing, Robben Island.
Good morning, Honourable Members. Good morning, Chair. I am Tembi Malau from the Department of Arts and Culture, the Director responsible for our entities. Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Good morning, Members. My name is Marva Dada, the Chief Executive at Robben Island Museum.
Good morning, Chairperson and members. I'm Sibusiso Buthelezi, the Chairperson of the Robben Island Council.
Thank you. At least now we all know who's here, who's not here. Without you, can we know you, please?
Good morning, Honourable Members and my colleagues from Robben Island and SAMHSA. I'm Petra van Niekerk. I'm the Parliamentary Liaison Officer in the Office of the Director General of Department of Tourism.
Ness, can you introduce yourself? Thank you again. We are now going to hand over to the museum delegation. We are this portfolio committee on tourism. We are doing oversight over the Department of Tourism. We have that responsibility, and we are those people that want to take public into confidence about whatever that happens with regards to that museum. We understand that you obtained a status, a world status as that museum, and there's that incident that happened on that day. We want to know more. We don't want to depend on the media. We want to hear it from, I can safely say, from the horse's mouth. What happened? Did you see it coming? Will it happen again? What measures are there in place? If you can answer all those questions in your presentation, I am now giving over to you, anyone who's going to lead the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and Thank you, Chairperson and members, honorable members of the committee and other dignitaries in the room. We appreciate the privilege of being invited here to be able to account for the incident that has actually that took place a couple of weeks ago. And I'm here with the entire delegation from the management led by the Chief Executive Officer. And I'm here on behalf of the Council of Robben Island in my capacity as the chairperson. I will quickly go through the background to the entity. And then I will hand over to the CEO and send our senior manager responsible for ferries to deal with the issue of the boat and leading up to the incident itself. That is a subject matter. We have been fully briefed as the Council of Robben Island and are quite satisfied that all control measures are in place. And we are also particularly appreciative of the way in which the management of Robben Island, the master and the skippers of the boat in question handled the situation. Particularly, praise must also go to National Sea Rescue Institute and also the control room of Transnet in how they actually responded to the incident. But the CEO will deal with those details. Broadly, for completeness, I thought it is important to cover because we account largely to the Portfolio Committee of Arts and Culture, so we don't always get the opportunity to interact with this committee. So I thought it is important to cover some of the background information so that we know what we're dealing with when we're talking about the Robben Island Museum.
Can I interrupt you on that point? We will be giving you 30 minutes each to make the presentation. That's what I've just forgotten. So okay. You must make your presentation within 30 minutes. Thank you.
Okay. Our vision is to develop and promote Robben Island as an inspiring world-class heritage site that is a symbol of triumph over human spirit over adversities and injustices. And our mission is to implement the best conservation practices, high-quality intellectual research, holistic and integrated interpretation, sustainable use, and foster healthy stakeholder relationship for the World Heritage Site. Our core business is to conserve and act as a custodian of the multi-layered cultural landscape being the World Heritage Site, to promote universal access, to offer inclusive and balanced interpretation, and to proactively and in a creative way do heritage research, interpretation, and critical scholarship on Robben Island cultural landscape, and also to develop sustainable, supportive institutional framework to sustain corporate governance across the various stakeholders of the institution. There are a number of acts, legislations, policies, treaties, and conventions that we are bound by as a World Heritage Site and also as a National Heritage Site, which includes the National Heritage Resources Act, the National Environmental Management Act, and we also interact with other legislation such as Maritime Pollution Intervention Act and others, inclusive of Disaster Management Act. There we've included a comprehensive list of all legislations that we have to deal with. We have a very close relationship and partnerships with the Department of Tourism, even though our primary mother department is the Department of Arts and Culture. In fact, over the last couple of years, the Department of Tourism has been actively involved in our activities as one of their prime destinations that they've identified in their operation. They funded our tourism needs assessment in 2014, funded the Robben Island signage project in 2015-16, funded the renewable energy project that was actually launched. It's going to be launched next week. Yeah. On Thursday, there's going to be a launch on Thursday of this project that was started in 2015, which is fully funded by the Department of Tourism. And there are a number of other ongoing activities that commenced in December 2015, the Open Day, which is now an annual event, upgraded the visitor center at Murray Harbour, and also the restaurant in Alpha One, the craft center, the digitization of the APP and the various tapes that are actually containing historical information. All those projects are funded by the Department of Tourism, and we appreciate the fact that the Department of Tourism over the last couple of years have actually taken keen interest in what is happening in Robben Island. We also have partnerships with Westgrow, which is a destination marketing organization of the province, with Robben Island being one of the big seven attractions. Our collaboration is through the tourism platform of the Western Cape and also the US-Africa showcase in September 2017. We did it in partnership with Westgrow. We participate in their initiatives through their research unit, the Convention Bureau, Filming Unit, and the Leisure Tourism Unit. So over and above the National Department of Tourism, we also engage actively with the Provincial Department of Tourism. Our contribution to the tourism numbers the numbers have been shown there, but in the last financial year, we contributed just over 370,000 visitors, 70% of which are foreign tourists. So this translates to 111 million that we contributed to the tourism revenue in the country. In the last financial year, and there's been a steady growth of no less than 2% per annum. Mm-hmm. I will pause there and give over to the CEO to deal specifically with the issue of the ferry.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I'm going to just deal with the background and our arrangements with the ferry operation, and then on the specifics, I'll hand over to our senior manager, ferry. Basically, Robben Island has got three ferries that we own. One of them, Susan Kruger, we've just got reports in the month of August, September that we must decommission it. So now we're left with two, and then we've got one cargo boat, and then we have five privately owned chartered vessels from the private sector. And our rim tour scheduling during your peak season, we have between 4 to 6 tours of 3.5 hours that take place depending on the demand on the various slots and the sea conditions. And during off-peak season, we normally have 3 to 4, which also depends on the demand and sea conditions. And then we also have private tours where people would not necessarily be part of the main tour. We also offer some private tours. And as well as tour guiding. Ferries are scheduled based on availability, tourist demand, and weather conditions being the critical factor. The contractual arrangement with our with the private owned chartered vessels, RIM procures services of private owned charters through an SEM process. Successful service providers sign a service level agreement with Robben Island, and that SLA defined the terms and conditions. And that would have been a process that was started some 3 or so years ago when when the management at that time, in its wisdom, noticed that our own vessels were unable to carry the demand, and we developed a partnership. We started with a 12-month period just to see how it would work, and that 12-month period really helped us when we came to the 36-month period tender that followed in devising the terms and conditions. The decision-making process is in place, early reporting of weather conditions, service delivery standards and compliance with maritime regulation sort of underline our contractual arrangements. The ferry operations and sea conditions, Robben Island is actually 11 kilometers away from the mainland in the Atlantic Ocean. Monitoring weather patterns is therefore priority for the safety and comfort of passengers. And what normally happened on a normal day is that each skipper of a boat and a vessel would sort of test the waters to see if their ferry can actually operate, and then they constantly communicate with our head of ferries, who then, based on the reports that he gets, would then come to some agreement with them whether to operate or not. And Madam Chair, I think from that point, I'll sort of hand over to our senior manager to sort of give us part of that report. Over to you, Senator.
Thanks, Chair and honorable members. Just to provide a little bit feedback on how our ferries actually operate, the Robben Island Museum, as well as private-owned ferries. All vessels, irrespective of their size, are subjected to statutory surveys, which are carried out by SAMHSA. All vessels, as part of our contractual agreements, are required to have some sort of maintenance plan or maintenance schedule in place. All vessels need to carry out sea trials, specifically on the weather conditions. And the reason for this is that each vessel operates differently under different weather conditions, and the master is best placed to understand his capabilities of the vessel. The master of each vessel will then inform Robben Island Museum of his decision on whether it is safe for his vessel or not. And based on that information received, that's when we normally take the decision on whether to cancel tours for the rest of the day or how operations will continue. And during the day as well, there's constant monitoring of the actual sea and weather conditions. As the boats are going up and down between Robben Island, they're providing us with feedback on a regular basis. The next slide, which I'd like to take you through, is the safety regulations and rescue arrangements. And I'm sure our colleagues here from SAMHSA can add further if need be. They actually best place. So basically, what we regulated with is called the Merchant Shipping Act 57 of 1951. And this act is used to regulate all marine matters in the South African jurisdiction. Under this act, the South African Maritime Authority, Safety Authority, SAMHSA, has been deemed as the authority to enforce this act, as well as any maritime regulations as determined by the international maritime organizations, such as Safety of Life at Sea, which is SOLAS, and Marine Pollution, which is MARPOL. So it is an international industry, and a lot of these standards are actually based on previous incidents that have occurred out at sea internationally. And SAMHSA enforces those recommendations made by these groups, as well as imposing their own stricter regulations if they feel necessary. Now, SAMHSA basically conducts safety inspections during the construction of the vessel, as well as on a yearly basis. They also carry out ad hoc inspections, and these inspections are to ensure the owners are keeping their vessels in compliance with maritime legislation. It should be noted that it's the duty of the owner and the master to ensure that the vessels are always in compliance at all times to meet these strict and stringent safety standards.
The marine industry is also a highly regulated industry, and compliance must be maintained at all times to ensure the safety of the passengers, crew, and the vessel itself. All masters and crew as well need to have necessary training and qualifications in order to operate their respective vessels. And SAMHSA normally determines the minimum number of crew and the qualification needed based normally on the size of the vessel or the power of the engines. As far as our maintenance and rescue arrangements go for the ferries itself, as indicated earlier, as part of the contractual agreements, all vessels are required to have a maintenance plan or maintenance schedule in place. This is to ensure that vessels are maintained on an ongoing basis. Each piece of equipment normally has a servicing plan for each component at different hours or months, similar to your car, and the servicing period will normally be reduced as your vessels get older. In terms of regarding rescue, in terms of the South African Search and Rescue Act, SAMHSA enforces this act via their subsidiary, which is the MRCC, the Marine Rescue Coordination Center. The SAMHSA Act legislates the parties involved and will give guidelines on the processes to be implemented in an emergency. As Robben Island operates in the transit area of the Transnet National Ports Authority, they are the actual authority in the area. The MRCC has delegated this responsibility for search and rescue to Transnet National Ports Authority. So, therefore, TMPA is the delegated lead authority in a marine rescue and will take command of the rescue operation within that area. TMPA will utilize emergency services such as NSRI, fire department, emergency services, and etc. during these emergencies. And I think RUM is involved in the rescue operations within the ambit of the SASA and the disaster risk management framework of the city of Cape Town. What we basically have in the next two slides is a high-level explanation of what took place on the 15th of September 2017, which was the day of the incident regarding the Tandi. The master of the Tandi, one of Robben Island Museum's chartered passenger ferries, went out beforehand and conducted a trial with his crew only and determined that weather conditions were fine for his vessel to take his passengers. The vessel departed Cape Town at approximately 11 o'clock. The Tandi departed the island at approximately 13:45 to return to Cape Town with their passengers. Approximately 25 minutes later, at around 14:10, the vessel experienced some trouble. A crew member of the Tandi found that the engine room was taking on water and the bilge pump could not cope. He then went up to the bridge to report to the master. The master sent out a distress call to port control for assistance, and it looks like it was during this time that the forward windows broke and more water flooded into the vessel. Passengers on board were asked to don their life jackets and to wait for sea rescue. Once port control received this distress call, port control immediately notified the National Sea Rescue Institute and emergency services to initiate a rescue operation. The Medeba 1, which is also one of our chartered ferries, left Robben Island shortly after the Tandi. They received the distress call and they went immediately to the Tandi to stand by to provide any assistance if needed. NSRI and emergency services went out to the vessel and started transferring the passengers from the Tandi to the Medeba 1. All people were brought back safely to shore, where medical personnel were on standby to assess them and make sure they were okay. They were given blankets, warm drinks. Trauma counselors were also in attendance. At the moment, the investigation is still ongoing and will provide further details into what exactly transpired on the day. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any additions from the team?
No.
On that note, is there any?
Madam Chair, I just wanted to emphasize a point that at the present moment, we're waiting for SAMHSA's investigation, and we also looked for some capacity in marine investigations within the ferries unit at Robben Island, just to make sure that we dig deep to actually see what we could have done, what we could do better going forward to make sure that we prevent such an occurrence happening again. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable members, can I first give Samsa before you indicate your hands so that we get both presentations before you can, because you can ask something that's going to be responded to by Samsa. Honorable Masse?
Thank you, Honorable. In fact, my hand was not to ask questions, was to say how about giving Samsa chance to present first, then we can ask questions thereafter.
Thank you. Over to you, Samsa. Can this team move to where Samsa was seated so that we have Samsa in front? If my memory serves me well, Samsa is as an authority is under the Department of Transport, and it is their responsibility to make sure that we are safe in the sea and in the waters there. They are here to give us their story with regards to the incident, because we want to make sure as this committee that our tourists are safe and their fears are allayed at all times. Over to you, Samsa.
Thank you, Madam Chair, honorable members. Once more, good morning. My name is Sobantu Tilai, as I already had introduced myself earlier, and I'm the Chief Operating Officer. And with me, I've got the Regional Manager in charge of this region, Captain Gustav Lowe, and our executive in charge of our unit that deals with special projects. We do man ships for the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, and in charge of that unit is Mr. Ian Calvert. There is a presentation that circulated. We've just added a few, two slides of detail. I'm going to skip, Madam Chair, some of the issues that I think are not relevant. But we took some pictures on the day, and that is what transpired as we see it. Maybe the bottom slide is the one that is telling for us, in that at least we know that the boat did retain its stability after the incident, which means that there may not have been any design flaws on the boat as it is, because what we want for the boat to happen is that after the incident, it must stay afloat and it must not sink, and this is what transpired. But about Samsa, the chair has already said that we are the agency of the Department of Transport, and we came out of the considerations of the 1996 policy on transport, which had a chapter on maritime transportation. And we largely geared towards the international trade for the country to make sure that the country is able to place its trade and fetch its trade from our trading partners, and that we're able to keep order at sea. And so we're governed by the International Maritime Organization, which has two areas of responsibility. That's the safety of life protection, or protection for the safety of life, as well as for the protection of marine environment by ships. But what brings us here today, mainly, in fact, is the safety of life, as well as the promotion of South Africa's maritime interests. Now, in terms of the safety of life, we and the manager from Robben Island Museum did mention that we have a center that's called MRCC that's up in Plattekloof. That is to make sure that we coordinate issues of safety and rescue at sea, as well as we've got one set of regulations that's dedicated specifically to Robben Island type operations, and that's called small vessel regulations. Those are the bulk of the acts that you administer. And Madam Chair, as you can see, it's largely geared towards the safety, Merchant Shipping Act, that's what was spoken about, the Marine Traffic Act, we control the movement of vessels, Wreck and Salvage Act, when they get into trouble, and we still need to coordinate the cleanup and all of those things. Protection and carriage of goods, that's the protection of the actual trade, as it were. Now, how we do this is we do licensing and registration of vessels that operate, and we are required to ensure that the safety integrity of those ships from a design point of view and operation is kept intact. And in order for us to do that, we do a whole lot of surveys, whether it's from a loading point of view, safety point of view, the construction integrity, as well as ensuring that the people that operate those vessels are adequately trained and competent, as well as that they do the same things, the procedures and all of those things. I'm not going to talk about cargoes, but that's part of the work we do. But in respect of casualty response, just to digress, Madam Chair, when we had an incident in Durban, we almost closed the port of Durban, and we were on the ground because we have a duty to respond for all maritime emergencies, and that's our casualty response function that we take this. And the response that took place on the day of this particular incident would fall under that area. And maybe lastly, we do have safety programs that we run. I will skip, or maybe this is last of the technical areas. We are required to know at every point that this is the situation within our coastline, so the number of ships passing our coast, and in that regard, we operate a whole lot of systems to allow us to do that. I'm going to skip all those other slides and get exactly to what transpired on the day. Now, it's already been said what is the lay of the land in respect of the Robben Island operations. We've got a list of the boats for the Robben Island Museum.
Sorry, Chair. Sorry to disturb you. Can we be led as to... I see you skip slides.
Excuse me. The presentations are not paged. I was depending on the monitors, but we're on the page that says Robben Island Operations on top. Excuse the fact that we did not number it. But if you look at the monitors there, and then just compare with what you have. Sorry about that, Chair. Okay. Now, we have operators that manage passenger vessels in the Port of Cape Town, and any one of those operators can take passengers, and we do understand that they are contracted to Robben Island Museum from time to time. And we've got a list of those operators. Now, the the annual, we do inspect those ships and ensure that they comply with all our regulations. Now, you need the annual safety survey to ensure that they comply. There are a whole lot of other things. There is the standards for training and certifications. They are guided by an international code called STCW. They don't apply to these ships to the extent that they are categorized as small vessels, passenger vessels, operating locally. The insurance of passengers, again, it's an international requirement, but there is nothing compelling the operators to insure passengers in our legislation. However, we do carry out ad hoc inspections to ensure that the vessels continue to abide by the conditions for which we license them. And we need to ensure that at all times those ships, they, as I'm saying, abide by those rules for which we license that are applicable. The only limitations for operations of a passenger vessel, as specified in our regulations, if you look at Class 6, which is the same class vessel that we're looking at, it says a passenger ship which operates a port or is engaged on voyages to sea in fine weather with not more than 250 persons on board in the course of its voyage. The ship is at no time more than 15 miles from the point of departure, no more than 5 miles from land. So the Robben Island operations are guided by specific regulations. So we do the risk analysis that you conduct on the vessel is on the basis that at all times you would be not too far from the port precinct. Now, with regards to the incident, this vessel had been in operation for no less than 3 years, and it has conducted regular trips to the island. We know that the vessel had an approved stability book because we administer that, we check that at all the time. We do know that the skipper on the day had a valid certificate of competence. We do know that the weather conditions on the day were quite adverse. And our preliminary investigation tells us, we look at the screen for this part. Our preliminary investigation tells us that the vessel lost one engine and steering as soon as it left the island and then started to take water. We do know that NSRI, National Ports Authority, Port Control, and others responded to the emergency. And then the rescue operation started and incorporated a whole lot of ships that may have been that were in the vicinity. The vessel was towed back, and it had kept its structural integrity as well as stability. Now, we are conducting an investigation, and we should have it ready within the next 2 weeks or so, which would have been a month since the incident. What we had also captured is that, because when we look at the investigation, we look at the vessel itself and we satisfy that it had met the requirements from a construction point of view. We look at the operators from a requirement point of view. They were adequately trained from a certification point of view. The next thing that the investigation then considers is what transpired on board, the crowd control, what we call the actions. Now, that's a function of the investigation. And then we look around the vessel, outside the vessel. The ship departed from a harbor. The one thing that we can note today is that there is no harbor master at Robben Island. and the importance of the harbour master is that they determine when to open and when to close the harbour. They monitor the weather so that at a particular point along the deterioration of the weather, they say it's now no longer safe to do that. It's never been a requirement. So if that is a recommendation that we will make, it is an observation. We don't know how much that had an impact on the incident on the day. And then the last part that we generally would consider is the office side support systems to the operations themselves. Where the weather conditions taken in place, how do they get received, who interprets them? Very much the same like aviation, because in your voyage planning, you're supposed to take all of those things into account. And those are the details that will emerge at the end of the investigation. And that is, in fact, why these things take longer, because you quickly are able to get to what transpired. But then in order for us to get to the reason, then we need to investigate all the other surrounding factors. And as I'm saying, we are still to approach both the operator, because in this instance it was not Robben Island Museum, but the other operators, as well as the whole issue of contracting. We are aware that generally the biggest risk is the pressure that the ship master, and in this case the skipper, are under. If the weather deteriorates, the operator and the owner wants the ship to operate. So it is possible that they get instructed to sail even when the weather conditions or other conditions are adverse. We do not make any conclusion yet because we do not have any of those. We do not have complete facts. But this is the lines along which our investigations will proceed. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. That's the presentation from SAMHSA. And now I will give it to honorable members to raise whatever. Tell them, honorable members, if you refer your question to SAMHSA, to Robben Island, they must get that indication. Can I note hands? Honorable Force, honorable Adams, in that order. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, firstly, your presence here today is as a result of a letter that I sent to the committee chair asking that you appear before this committee. And I do so on the basis that we must never forget that all of our actions, whether it's the Robben Island Museum, the Department of Tourism, and any other entity, SAMHSA in this particular case, all of our actions and our efforts must go towards ensuring that whatever we do, it must never become an insult to the legacy of Madiba, because this is what Robben Island symbolizes for us as a nation. And also because it's important for us as a committee to ensure that all of the activities, such as the ferry operations, the museum, the tours, everything must be done in a way that contributes to quality and to safety, because it's very, very important given the significance of Robben Island in terms of the South African political landscape, and also because we have a mandate as a committee to ensure that all of its entities perform optimally in ensuring that compliance standards are met so that all operations are done in such a way that it contributes to quality of a very important tourism product. But obviously, over a long period of time, there's been a lot of concerns about the Robben Island Museum. In May this year, issues about price fixing emerged, problems with the ferries dating back for a number of years now, and so the list goes on and on. But yet, your figures prove that you've increased the number of visitors over the last year or so, which is a step in the right direction, but it doesn't always come down to only numbers. It comes down to operations. So we need to make sure that we've got a good product that is market ready and then we can come and boast with the numbers. Talking about the numbers, and I've raised this point earlier on, so I'm going to start there. The chairperson mentioned that there was a 70% number of people that were from international visitors and 30% domestic. So we need to make sure that as a country that this particular island and its significance to us as South Africans become much more accessible to South Africans. So I would like to hear from you, what plans do you have in place to actually turn that figure around, that we have 70% locals and 30% people from other countries or foreign visitors? So it comes down to pricing, and I've made the point earlier on. I know that there are some other entities and important products on our tourism landscape, for example, the Table Mountain cable car, that have introduced a pricing system applicable to South African citizens for the month of October, November. Children go for free, and people can visit the Table Mountain free of charge on the day of your birthday. So they're doing a lot of work to ensure that an important place such as Table Mountain is accessible to South Africans. And we know that the operations are expensive. The upkeep and safety and all these things come at a cost. But I would like to hear from you, what are you doing to make sure that we create a better pricing system for South African citizens, and that it's not only a once-off, but that it's sustainable? Look at the new museum that have opened up in the V&A waterfront. I think it's on Wednesdays all South African citizens can visit for free. I speak under correction, but they've really done a concerted effort to make sure that such an important museum, which is the biggest of its kind on the African continent, becomes much more accessible to South Africans. So the same argument goes to Robben Island. Now talking about the issue at hand, and this is now the reason why you are here today. A lot has been said about the weather conditions, the conditions of the ferry, and so on and so on. But let me go to the SAMHSA presentation. You mentioned that the vessel lost one engine and steering as soon as it left the island, and she started taking water. Now, I know that your report is not concluded, but usually when you lose an engine, it's not necessary that you will take on water. But so I don't want you to preempt the outcome of your report here today, but you've made this point now in a public forum. So I think you just need to maybe elaborate on that, because that is very, very concerning, to say the least. But then it comes to the report that you will table. Will that report be tabled publicly, or is it a report that will be used for internal purposes? Because I do believe that that report needs to be tabled publicly so that we know exactly what the extent of that incident was, so that we can prevent it in future. There's a lot of media reports going around, and the chair made the point in her introduction that we can't only rely on the media. We need to hear firsthand from the entity, SAMHSA and the Robben Island Museum, what went down on that particular day and maybe the days ahead, because I believe that there were reports in the media that certain compliance issues were not met. For example, the weather conditions, apparently there was a notification issued the morning about the weather not being favorable, and yet the ferry went out on that particular day and not adhering to the weather conditions. So we need to deal with that issue, because the presenter from SAMHSA said that there's not a harbour master at Robben Island, so they have to rely on their own visuals. But then what other mechanisms can we put in place? Should they not contact the harbour master at the V&A or at Cape Town Harbour or wherever, to make sure that there's synergy, so that we don't simply rely on only visuals, but that they file a proper report the morning, and on that report do all of their planning, because we know that weather changes quite rapidly in Cape Town. So we need to deal with these issues much better in the future. So again, it will come from your report, but I think we must make the point here today, and your views on that will be most welcome. Also, the passenger number. How many passengers are Tandi allowed to take on board in terms of the weight? Because there's been some reporting around the weight issue. I just want to get to my notes. The legislation is only applicable to vessels which exceeds 25 tons in weight, which Tandi does not. This raises then the question as to why Robben Island Museum is making use of such small ferries, which do not meet the specifications necessary to qualify a vessel in terms of national regulation. So let's talk about that issue as well in terms of the number of passengers that it is allowed to take on board, the weight issue and so on, because we need to fix this, and we need to fix it now so that we don't have a reoccurrence. We are entering a very busy December period with a lot of international visitors descending on our city, and also locals who want to know that we have good quality and safe tourism products on offer, so that we don't damage our tourism brand. Because this incident obviously sparked international interest, and we need to make sure that we fix it and that we do it right now. And then also the issue of the Manila amendments to the International Convention of Standards that says that you do not need to apply to port operations when vessels operate in the Table Bay. The question is why, because they're not really operating only in the Table Bay, they're actually going to Robben Island. So why would they then not need to comply to those very important International Convention on Standards? And the same applies to the insurance of passengers, where it says there is currently no SAMHSA-administered enabling maritime legislation that requires insurance of passengers. Again, the question, why? Because when passengers board a vessel, they want to know that they are doing so in a way that is protecting them as well in terms of legislation and other compliance issues. So I would like to hear your answer on that particular question so that we can amend or deal with it going forward, because this is an important lesson learned. And I want us to also understand that it's not only for us to find fault, it's for us to find fault and fix it in terms of our own legislation, or if it's international conventions, then let's deal with it in that way that will make sure that we fix what is wrong and that we can move forward and learn from this very important lesson. Madam Chair, I'm going to leave it there for now, because I'm sure that once they respond, there will be further issues that I could pick up on. But those are, in broad, my questions to the Robben Island Museum and to SAMHSA. There's just one other issue, and that is a report about the Robben Island Museum that is reassessing its guiding service. So I think it's a good opportunity to ask the museum, maybe at the end, to just give the committee some feedback on your new integrated tour guiding service. Also the fact that the report states that you are considering establishing a restaurant and a visitor center on the island. If you can just share with us your plans in that regard, because the Department of Tourism has provided funding in the past and is working closely with you in terms of the visitor information center and all of the related services. So is it something separate, or is it part of our plan, so that we know that we are spending our money wisely and not duplicating or doing something that is perhaps not in line with the Department of Tourism's vision for Robben Island, and then, of course, yourselves. So I think that could come in at the end, because I'm using then the opportunity to ask you on those issues as well, as it was reported in the media earlier this month. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Honourable Adams. Noted, Madam.
Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity. My colleague has covered a lot of my questions. But I want to start with the South African Maritime Safety Authority. As a safety authority, I think you have a very broad mandate. And you say here on, I think it's the third slide, ensure the safety of life and property at sea. Now, don't you see that the safety also should be coupled with insurance? And what is your stand on that? Because you are ultimately responsible for the safety of vessels and people, as I read your mandate, if I read it correctly. Then you say that one of your mandates is that you want to prevent pollution. Now, as an authority of transport, and your Department of Transport, you must work very closely with the Department of Environment. I'm also a member of Public Works. And a month or two ago, we visited small harbors in the Western Province. And what struck me was that there are many sunken vessels in the small harbors. Now, you say one of your mandates is to prevent and combat pollution of the maritime environment by ships. Now, how are you liaising with the other department on that pollution? Because in one harbor, I think it's Saldanha, there are almost 7 sunken vessels. We haven't visited all of them yet, but the vessels are sunken, and they prove a danger. Then, Chairperson, very unlucky that these authors, they didn't number the slides so that we can speak to the slides and have them there. Do you think your casualty response, do you think that was enough? You had a preliminary investigation. What were the lessons that you learned that you would do better after the 15th of September? On the slide, the last bullet, they say SAMHSA is conducting an investigation and a preliminary report will be available within 1 month. 1 month from when? Because we are already 1 month from the incident. So one month from when will the report be available? And Chairperson, my request is what my colleague asked, that we also get a report. And you know, this incident must have impacted on tourism at Robben Island. And my question there is to the management of Robben Island. What are you going to do to curb this impact, possible impact? Because if you say 70% of your passengers are international people, this must have an impact on tourism arrivals. And how are you going to mitigate that? I've already spoken to the insurance of passengers. Don't you think, Maritime Authority, that is a gap that we should pursue and with the Department of Transport? Chairperson, Robben Island Museum. You are a World Heritage Site, the proud of South Africa, with a history that I think most of the nations of this world are ending is with, not with regard to what happened there, but that this is a living museum. Now, you haven't told us of the financial impact, and I would have loved that, Chairperson. I think that is a gap in the presentation. I think that there is really a gap, although they do not report to us, but as a Department of Tourism injects a lot of money into this entity or museum, and we should have insight in what happens if the money is spent correctly. I would have loved at that stage, this stage, for the content advisor to answer me on that one. Do you think authority, Chairperson, Chairman of the Council, do you think your budget is enough? We know there are very many environmental challenges at the island, such as the goats and the rabbits and the mice and the rats. And what would you do in case the people couldn't have been ferried, or the weather changed so much on the 15th of September that the passengers should have stayed for safety reasons
on Robben Island? Do you have the facility to keep them there? As chairperson of the Council of Robben Island, are you satisfied with the way the management are managing the operations? And I would like to know what's the length of your term, how many members you are. Then I also want to speak, chairperson, on the visitor numbers. Yeah, first I want to ask that dead people on the Tundi. You said you housed them, they were they got blankets, they were counseling, but what are you going to do to make the impact of that occurrence positive so that overseas customers can return? On the visitor numbers, you said 70% of them are foreign visitors and 30% of them are domestic visitors. Now, I would like you to break up the 30% of domestic visitors, because we in tourism have a problem in increasing our domestic tourism numbers. And I would like to know how you as Robben Island Institute management with the council, how do you encourage our local people to visit these World Heritage Sites? Because you must remember that we are very fortunate, and that the people in the Western Cape, in this municipal area, are very lucky to have a World Heritage Site at their doorstep. But as my colleague said, pricing. But what are you doing to invite schools, make it from accessible? And you know, as a Robben Island World Heritage Site, you have an important role to play with regard to social cohesion, to mitigate the wrongdoings of the past and to send a more positive message to our communities. Now, on the ferry department, you know, it was interesting to listen to the names. You have three Robben Island Museum-owned vessels. Do you think that is adequate, the number? The naming. Interesting. Susan Creer. Tundi. And Madiba. Do you think you are transformational enough? These privately owned vessels, what is the duration of the contracts? And how do you bring those contracts under the attention of the disadvantaged communities? I see that the Merchant Shipping Act of 57 of 1951 is the act used to regulate all maritime matters in the South African jurisdiction. To all of you, don't you think there should have been an amendment? I was born in 1951. Look how old I am. Is that on par with international jurisdictions? And you, as the safety authority, should recommend that to the Department of Transport. Yeah, I've already talked to the impact of the incident of the 15th of September. Yeah,
I'm covered. Thank you, Chairperson.
And this question, I'm directing it to the Robin Island. I'm interested to hear if there's any penalty so far besides the investigation that is being undertaken by SAMHSA. There's an indication of the pollution or whether there's been any claims of the Robin Island from those passengers. We want to hear if there's any penalty so far as a result of the incident. The second portion of my question is the issue of marketing. It might have been covered. But you see, there's a tendency that of thinking that the Robben Island, because of its location in Cape Town, is the heritage state site of Cape Town. And I want to hear the management, in particular in Chairperson, because I can tell you, and even your statistics will not dispute you, that the people of Limbombo in remote areas, the people of Northwest, the people of Eastern Cape, in particular, transcribe those remote areas, majority of them have never been in the Robben Island. And for some reason, if that has been the case ever since the conception of Robben Island, it means there's a level of comfort in the city of comfort. I want to check your own role in terms of marketing Robben Island Museum, in particular to these remote areas that I'm referring to. Whether there's been some sort of career guidance that you have engaged our kids to at the level of school, at the level of TVET College, and specifically to these remote areas. You might tell me about Cape Town, that one I will know. Easy to go to any area in Cape Town because you are here, the majority of you are coming from here. But I want to know in areas outside Robben Island, in areas outside Cape Town, have you engaged in career guidance and also the team is calling that is based in school. The third part of my question refers to transformation. Unfortunately, South Africa has forced us to embrace the difficulty of speaking unspoken things, the very much disturbing things. But unfortunately, all of us have come to embrace the issue of management democracy. You must tell us, what are the issues in terms of your own management democracy? The black people and Africans in particular, how many are they in staff composition? Because it could be that probably why we're not finding expression as Robben Island Museum in these remote areas is because we have people that are there that are embracing the historical legacy of this country. And I'm asking you, tell us, take us into confidence that your agenda in terms of embracing transformation targets in this country. How many black people, how many Africans, how many women in particular? I have no responsibility to Chinese, I don't know Chinese. But I'm talking to this one that I've got obligation. The second part is the issue of community participation. I'm interested. My colleague has mentioned there that you've got
outsourced vendors. But I want to check, what is your role? Because you are here, we're asking the content advisor in relation about ocean economy. But what is your own role to ensure that cooperatives, community-based, are able to find expression there? See? That's transformation. And all of us have got that responsibility. See? So what is it that you are doing as Robben Island Chairperson to ensure that our own communities are able to derive benefits out of Robben Island Museum? I'm saying this to you, Chairperson, because I believe one of your key roles is to steer the ship towards transformation. But unless you also embrace the legacy of poverty, then you'll have a problem. So the point I'm raising is that I'm putting this because I want a direct answer. People on TV are watching Saola asking this transformation question deliberately to you, and I want answers. The fourth part of my question towards Europe, the issue of subsidization, I think it has been raised. Your own report, the report says the composition of passengers was 70%, which I assume is my math right. It says 7-1 local in terms of ratio, if I'm correct. It says 7-1. And I'm also interested in the breakdown of that. And if that is so much skewed, what commitments can you give us to make sure that at least we balance that? See, it has been raised, of course, that tourism in South Africa is very expensive to locals. What is it that are you going to do to make sure that our people are able to find expression so that you have a balance? It can't be about chasing money. Of course, you need money. But also, if you are saying that it's a heritage site, you have an obligation to ensure that people of South Africa are able to participate and find expression. You must tell us if you just keep them away and say that you are just bringing even this one, this 30%, that's for compliance, just to say that they are people of South Africa. Otherwise, your target are those people from outside. So tell us. I think that's the point I wanted to make. And then with regard to SAMHSA, just a few questions. I think the question of capacity has been raised, yes. And my interest is that I understand you are an institution. You are still investigating. I'm curious to know whether that capacity has not been stressed, you see, because it could have been one of the reasons. But I think you are going to answer it as it has been asked. Now, the crew master or the ship master, it comes from the report that he's the one that sanctioned that no resource can proceed with the speed. I understand the preliminary report has not come yet. But would you say that the ship master might have misled the Robben Museum, you see, on that one. And if for some reason the fault comes from the ship master or even the RMI on that matter, what are you looking at in terms of the minimum and the maximum sanction, if that is the case? Obviously, I'm not saying give us the findings, but I'm just out of the only expertise that should the fault come out of the ship master, what are we looking at in terms of the minimum and the next one? The last point under that one, Chair, is that I just want if something can just give us assurance in terms of the degree of independence on that issue. See, very important, we're in South Africa, yes. So we must be told in this portfolio committee that how independent are we in terms of reference? We are far away from being manipulated by RMI, because we understand that this has caused serious news in the country. So any manipulation is possible. So tell us that you are far away from any chance of being manipulated on your investigation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Members. I've got just some questions. To the delegation, I must say, we have invited you to this meeting based on the on that incident. I am correct, my observation is correct to say there is a need for a joint meeting between arts and culture, where you belong, where some of you belong, transport, where some of you belong, and tourism, and any other department that has to do with the Robben Island Museum. That's my observation. I will advise the chair to arrange such a meeting, which is a joint meeting, so that everyone that's involved, because as tourism committee, we've just invited you based on this incident on a tourism point of view. Let me come to my questions. On this one, I just need a yes or no answer. I believe that Tandi is not one of your own as the museum. Am I correct to say that? Yes, Tandi is one of the privately owned vessels. Okay. I was to say, if you have 5 privately owned, are they enough? How do you source them? The other member has just asked the same type of a question. How are they sourced? Because we believe in transparency. How long were they there, the 5? How long were they there? Were they recruited on the same time? How long were they there? What is happening since Tandi is under investigation, the incident? Is Tandi operational now? What's happening to Tandi? You must be able to give us an answer with regards to that. What I will also advise the museum is that their communications personnel must be able to take charge, if they have not yet started, to have a message that will bring back the confidence that South Africans and the world normally have with regards to the Robben Island issue. For them to say, not in their name, because we are able to say as the committee, not in our lifetime. You highlighted in your presentation, SAMHSA, that you are going to have the report of the investigation in 1 month's time, starting from when the incident happened then. We must be able to say, even if we are in our homes, to say at least the investigation has been completed. As from when? Who will you give the report to? Will we as a committee be in a position to get that report? Because we are one of the committees that invited you with regards to the incident. I think most of the questions have been asked by the members. Can I give it to you to respond then? Thank you. Can we start with the museum? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson and honorable members of the committee.
Can I interrupt you there? If there are, we invited you based on the incident. If there are questions that have been asked and you are not prepared now to give answers to them, you may say so that we can give you time to go back, prepare a report, and channel those answers through our committee secretary. Thank you.
Thank you one more time, Honorable Chairperson. I can confirm that we are quite happy to answer any question. And and we are ready even now to answer any question where we don't have adequate information. We'll ask for the indulgence, but I'm confident that we do have answers to all the questions that have been asked. On the observation that, okay, maybe it's also important to emphasize the point that even though five of these ferries are privately owned, they are not on the asset register of Robben Island. We don't want to leave a message that we are distancing ourselves from those ferries. We take full responsibility for what is happening because we've contracted them, we've procured them to provide a service for Robben Island. So we don't want to send any message that we're distancing ourselves or we're shifting any blame or anything to that effect. There was an observation that there is no harbor master, that and there was also a suggestion that we rely, or rather the master relies on visuals. I think nothing can be further from the truth on the latter part. Yes, we may not necessarily have a dedicated harbor master, but we've got a formal relationship with Transnet Control Room, which is a harbor master for the VNA waterfront. So the harbor master may not be supplied by Robben Island Museum, but it is supplied with, there is a permanent harbor master who's there at VNA, supplied, managed, and coordinated and accountable to Transnet, who are the authority in that environment. In any event, it is not our core business to neither is it our expertise. It will be, I think it will lead to confusion if we can also have our own harbor master. So we rely on Transnet, and we've never had a problem with that. The issue of the weather condition on any day. Yes, there's a responsibility of the ferry master and the skippers to play their responsibilities, but we have constant feedback from the Transnet Control Room. On average, throughout the year, we've got average of 15 to 20 trips that are cancelled every month due to weather conditions. On every month, between 15 and 20 trips are cancelled as a result of weather conditions. That's the extent of the interaction we have with the harbor master, because that's where we get our cue. I'm not saying that there's no responsibility from the ferry master, but I'm saying that that's the extent of our interaction with the harbor master, and we've got that dynamic relationship. And that number 15 to 20 is an average monthly, but obviously the incidences of cancellations will happen more towards winter and less during the peak period, for obvious reasons, that the more adverse weather conditions are in the winter period. But if you had to spread it on a straight line, it will be average of 15 to 20 trips per month that are cancelled due to weather, adverse weather conditions. But we welcome further investigations into that, and we'll be open to taking more advice and guidance and will embrace whatever recommendations come out of that. On the issue of the insurance, it has been stated that legally we are not compelled to have that insurance. But I want to bring to the attention of the House that we actually do have the insurance, even though we are not compelled by law, but we do have the insurance because we've considered it a best practice issue. So we, not because we're compelled by any legislation, but because we thought it was the right thing to do. But I can confer, Honorable Chair, we do have insurance. Robben Island has had a number of negative incidents of negative publicity over a number of years. And members, I'm sure members will agree that over the last 2 to 3 years, such reports have actually grown thin to non-existent. That's why this particular thing has created such excitement. I'm not diminishing its significance, but this thing comes out because we've managed to clean up all those that environment where there'll be stories after stories that are less than positive. That's why this one then props up like a thorsome, like a sore thumb. That being the case, I also want to disagree with the suggestion that the incident has damaged the international brand of Robben Island. On the contrary, especially also based on anecdotal responses and also other responses that we've received from all the industry role players, because of the world-class response to this particular incident, I think the feedback has been very positive. As soon as the stress signal was triggered from Tandi, our Madiba One immediately responded. It went that direction. As soon as Transnet was alerted, National Sea Rescue was alerted, the city of Cape Town was alerted, ER24 were alerted, and the response was out of this world. Of the 65 passengers who were on board, all of them were moved from Tandi, which had taken water, into Madiba. In fact, Madiba arrived even before National Sea Rescue arrived there. So their response was actually magnificent. It came from all angles. It came from our own operational staff. Madiba diverted to go to the site. National Sea Rescue responded. ER24 responded. City of Cape Town Disaster Management responded. So the actual experience itself, even though it was potentially a dangerous situation, but the response from all role players, how they all responded. And I think in terms of moving forward, it may be useful to also for the committee to get that feedback from those other players, the National Sea Rescue, the City of Cape Town Disaster Management, Transnet Control Room, and ER24, who also responded on time. Once the passengers were moved back to the harbor, they were attended to, and in a very short space of time after counseling was also provided, trauma counseling was also provided, only one of those 64 had to be taken to Somerset Hospital for treatment because of individual hypothermia, the exposure to cold conditions. But everybody else was taken back to their hotels after the incident. So I want to propose a theory, or rather a thesis, that the actual experience drew more positive feedback rather than negative feedback, particularly because of how our disaster recovery actually responded. All the key players actually responded promptly, from internally, Transnet, National Sea Rescue, disaster management, everybody responded very quickly. And as a result, there was no what could have been a potentially dangerous situation actually became a very smooth operation. And I'm sure, I have no doubt that will find expression in the final report, which we believe that it will be independent because we also waiting eagerly for that report because we want to continuously improve our operations. We want continuously to give the best possible services to our visitors. The cargo boat Dias and Susan Kruger are old boats. They are more than 40, 50 years. I don't have the ages at the top of my head. The CEO will help me with that. But they are old historical boats that were used to transport the prisoners who were incarcerated on Robben Island. So they are old. They've always been subjected to regular inspection by SAMHSA. To our frustration, because too frequently they're actually taken off operation for that maintenance, for that other thing. So our relationship with SAMHSA, it's a highly professional, but it is certainly not a sweetheart relationship. As I'm saying, that to our frustration, our boats are taken off operation too frequently for our liking. The same also to go to Skhululekile. Skhululekile is a relatively new boat. But even now, as we speak, it is off operation. Because of who? Because of SAMHSA. It's gone back to fix that and fix that. But we understand it's their job. They have to do that. We have to respond. And not once have we defied their instruction to actually take it off operation to attend to this and that and that. So we'll continue doing that to the satisfaction of all concerned. In order to avoid the disruption of our regular service, because our old boats are old and their capacity is generally low, and because Skhululekile is always experiencing that situation of being on and off service for various reasons. I'm not entirely blaming, so I'm just saying it lightheartedly. Because Skhululekile is unable to be all the time running, because from time to time it has to be off operation and come back, off operation, come back. So that's why we had to respond by procuring private boats. At the moment, we are contracted to 5. About 2 years ago, when we seriously moved into this situation of contracting private boats, we realized that it was important to move away from ad hoc procurement of the private boats, to rather proactively define terms of reference and then issue an open RFP and procure these services, so that we have a sort of a panel, such that whenever we need such a service, we'll then draw from that panel. Now, we'll understand that these ferries are not generally, it's not like a quantum on the streets of Cape Town. So they are not necessarily thousands of them. So there's a very limited pool. So we entered into our initial contract, which was a 12-month contract, which expired earlier this year, and that we ran another RFP, and we've now recently concluded a 36-month contract. So the intention is to continue with that. Towards the expiry of this 36 months, we'll issue another RFP for another 36 months. Having said that, we've also not closed the window to say, in between, if there's a compelling case where there's another service provider who will then emerge meeting all the criteria, we'll not close our eyes to that. And the CFO is here. I think he can confirm that of the 5 privately owned boat, only 4 went through that RFP. The 5th one came after the RFP, which is the Madiba one. It came later. But we realized that we can't ignore this because it meets all our specifications. It is actually a relatively brand new boat, which had come in, apparently it was registered somewhere in Tanzania, but then it came here. I don't know the details correctly, but where it came from. But it came after the RFP. But the principle I'm raising is that we've established the framework, RFP, the current contract is a 36-month contract, with all the specifications, and we've done detailed research on and all those things. But what is important is that we've established the framework. Having done so, we've also taken note of the fact that this is a very small industry. When a product comes that fits the specifications, we will take it on board, as we have done with Matiba. Yes, there was a story of price fixing that was in the media about May. But that's a result of our own intervention. It is us, out of this process of procuring private boats, we picked up that, because it's a very small industry, we realized that the quotations are too similar for comfort. It is us who have actually alerted the Competitions Commission, and we can supply the records of that. We are the complainants. So we were the complainants. It's us who opened the case with the Competitions Commission. So again, to us, it's actually a positive public story that when we realize that were being ripped off, we alerted the authorities that something is not right there. who are being ripped off by people who are colluding because they know we depend on them. So we alerted their responsible authorities, and they've been punished by the Competitions Commission. Chandi has the capacity of 70, so the passengers on that day were 65 plus 5 crew members. So there was no, we'll never overload. It's physically not possible to overload because the number of tickets that we issue are limited to the number of seats. So it would not have been possible to sell more tickets than there are seats. So we can confirm that there were 65 passengers and 5 crew members. The Robben Island has been inscribed as not only a national heritage site, a national museum, but it is also a World Heritage Site in terms of all the international protocols. Our most supreme authority is the UNESCO through the Department of Environment. The department, so we're an entity of Department of Arts and Culture, but in our capacity as a World Heritage Site, we are accountable to the Minister of Environment as the country representative to UNESCO. There is extensive marketing of Robben Island, but Robben Island belongs to the peoples of the world because it was inscribed on the basis of its vision and mission of being a symbol of the triumph of human spirit over adversities and injustices. It is on those bases that it has been inscribed as one of the World Heritage Sites. That's what South Africa offers to the world. Robben Island, the symbol of the triumph of human spirit over adversities and injustices. So therefore, it serves as an inspiration to the peoples of the world. That's why they flock here. That's why 70% of our visitors are from all over the world. Because most of those visitors are inspired by what Robben Island stands for. So the fact that 70% of our visitors are from all over the world is a point to be celebrated. It's not a negative at all. In fact, it's one of the very few destinations in South Africa that has got that proportion of international visitors. We don't see it as a negative thing because that's why I want to repeat why it is a World Heritage. It's inscribed in UNESCO as a World Heritage Site. Every World Heritage Site all over the world is inscribed for a particular purpose. This particular one, it is inscribed because it symbolizes the triumph of human spirit over adversities and injustices. That is very attractive to the peoples of the world, to the downtrodden of the world. They want to be part of that experience. They want to experience that symbol of triumph of human spirit over adversities and injustices. That's why they want to be in Robben Island. That's why they spend their money to come to Robben Island. It's not the rich and famous. It's ordinary people who come. I'm sure we can also provide the profile of those people who come. It's not like the fancy, high and mighty. Yes, presidents, film stars, they also make sure that they come there. But the bulk of our visitors are ordinary people who identify with what Robben Island stands for. I think it's a positive thing. 30%. What is the composition of this 30%? Again, it is ordinary people. We are unable to sell enough tickets, especially during peak periods. There's always a scramble for spaces. Can we do more to expand access? Yes. Is the limitation price? Not necessarily, because we turn people away, because we don't have enough capacity to take them to Rowan Island, and also our facilities are unable at this stage to actually accommodate more than what we are able to accommodate. That's why we're managing the increase very steadily. Do you want to go even further? When you read our ICMP, our second ICMP, we are currently, ICMP stands for Integrated Conservation Management Plan, which is a requirement by UNESCO, which we have to produce every 5 years. Every 5 years we have to produce an integrated conservation management plan. This ICMP has got a number of chapters. One of them is a visitor management plan, which has to be approved by UNESCO. Our second ICMP has put in specific numbers, and it has given us the opening to reach up to 1 million visitors per year. However, it also comes with guidance on the pace towards moving to that million per annum. And we are working within that framework of that visitor management plan, which is a chapter of the ICMP. We are currently working on the third ICMP because the current one expires next year. Next year, our current ICMP expires, so we'll be moving into the third ICMP. There was a question on the guiding services, which is part of our visitor management plan. It's actually the implementation of that component of the ICMP, which is the visitor management plan. The important thing is that the facilities must be able to keep up with the number of visitors, and we have specific projects and programs. I'm sure if we are invited to present our strategic plan, we can come back. I would propose that we be given an opportunity, because we've got exciting plans and that we are very keen to actually talk about on any platform, particularly our conservation management plan, which deals with the environment on site and how we're responding to the environment. We've got a visitor management plan, and we also have an operational management plan. There are also other chapters within the ICMP, including the marketing plan and the like. But the key thing is to keep that to consistently improve the quality of our service offering to our visitors and other stakeholders. But the key is that visitor experience. We've got a project that is also rolling out that I think it will be important to talk about, which is the memorialization plan, which derives from the heritage of Robben Island. We know that Robben Island has got multiple layers. The story of Robben Island has got multiple layers, but there's also a political layer to Robben Island. So as far as that is concerned, we've got a record of close to 5,000 people who've been on Robben Island at different times as political prisoners. So we've got an ambitious program, which is the memorialization, whereby we're actually telling the story of each and every one of those ex-political prisoners who have been on Robben Island. And that project is funded by Lotto, through the funding from Lotto, and it is at an advanced stage. I'm sure members of this committee, because it is part of the visitor management plan in enhancing the visitor experience on Robben Island.
Sorry for the interruption. Can you summarize so that we are able to give also to SAMHSA? Thank you.
Yes. Accessibility, the 30%, yes, we do have special tours for categories of the vulnerable categories. We do have concessionary pricing. We do have specialized tours for schools, church groups, community groups that we actively market, not just in the Western Cape, but across the country. We do have packages that we do, that we bring as many people as possible to Robben Island. But the important thing is that we don't view the 70% as being a negative matter, because Robben Island belongs to the peoples of the world. Have we apologized to the families? We continue to show that humility. All our public statements, our media releases, and our interaction with all those individual 65 people have always been based on that humility, that we actually do not appreciate ourselves the fact that they had to go through that trauma. As I said, that the anecdotal experience and feedback has been very positive. All of them, they marvel at the way we, our systems could respond to that particular incident. Penalty to Tandi, certainly, because our relationship is based on contract. But obviously we'll be guided by what comes out of the SAMHSA, and Tandi is not in operation at the moment for obvious reasons. None of the ferries that operate our services can operate unless they are so certified by SAMHSA. Transformation, the CEO will deal with that. I've dealt with the issue of how we procure the, how are they sourced, is through an RFP. Currently we are on a 36 months contract, which must still run another, I think it's only been 6 months in operation, so there's another 30 months, but the window is not closed for any ferry that meets the criteria, because we prefer to have more rather than less in our panel. Then lastly, there was a question about my own term. I'm into the third term as the chair, and which started in June. The third one started in June last year, so there's still another 2 years to go. Thank you. It's a three-year term, so the current term started in June last year.
In less than 2 minutes, can you respond, CEO?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I just wanted to handle the question around our staff demographics. On a plus or minus 250 headcount, 191 are blacks, and of that 191, 84 are females. Yes, that would be answer on that one. On that integrated tour guiding model that has recently been introduced, that was necessitated by the succession planning that must take place, because
In the past, our tour guiding was split into two. The maximum security prison tour guiding would have been done by the ex-political prisoners themselves, and then the general tour guides would do the other layers of the island. But because of age, we were beginning to prepare for that a tour guide at Robben Island must be able to do the tour guiding of the island as a whole, from A to Z. So that's what we've recently introduced late last year. Around the restaurant and the visitor center is part of what Chairperson made mention around the memorialization. The visitor center is where the mothers, the fathers, the sisters and brothers would come and meet with the prisoners. So we'll be introducing that layer as part of the tour. So the entity sort of assisted us with funding to try and improve presentation of an interpretation of that facility. And then the restaurant, we are told it was a bar for the guards on the island. We're looking at improving it and making it as a place where people will have something to eat when they are on the island. We're trying to look at all these questions, Madam Chair. I hope we're covering all of them. There was a question that if the boats were unable to come back and we had to sleep on the island, currently at present on the island we've got the governor's house, which has got about 18 rooms, and then we've got the multi-purpose center, which got about 90 beds. So we could have made a backup plan for that 70 on the island. Madam Chair, I don't know if we would have messed up. Outreach. The outreach aspect, we have an NGO. It's twofold. We've got an NGO that we've partnered with, which sort of arrange events across the 9 provinces in the country, where we have an opportunity to send the outreach staff to be able to take Robben Island to the communities. That target group there is the high school students. And also as part of the NDT funding, we are currently in a process. There are about 20 participants of mothers from Khayelitsha, Langa, in a craft project, and we're likely to be selling the first products out of that. Maybe marketing can add on this from December this year, the involvement of communities on the island. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Can I give it to you, Samsa? But we are targeting within at least, let me give you not more than 5 minutes. Can you start?
Thank you, Chair. We will answer as the authority that we are, straight to point. So there are issues that we think are still part of the investigation. The vessel took water, Honorable Force, not because the engines stopped working, but there was a wash over the bow that broke the window, as we understand. The vessel is quite in a bad shape, but that was weather-related. So it's two events that obviously happened at the same time that gave us the emergency that we got, as far as we understand now. The conditions were not favorable. We didn't say that. We said the conditions were adverse. Now, along that trajectory of adversity, there is a cutoff point. And that is the reason you want somebody to preside over those decisions. And we appreciate the fact that there's a relationship between the RIM and the harbor master. That's a subject of the investigation as well. The question about passengers has been answered. We agree. We concur with RIM in that respect. The sizing of the vessel, we are a regulator, but we obviously wouldn't want to be regulating anybody out of business. And we appreciate the fact that when we license a ship, we license it for operations. So you will carry that number of people to go that distance, depending on the stability, the endurance of the vessel, etc. So every vessel that RIM operates, if we license them, we've done our risk assessment. And I can appreciate the fact that, and I'm not sure what their numbers are, their vessels are sized much bigger than the ones that they sometimes operate, but we always thought it's their operational requirements, and we don't necessarily have an issue with that. The issue of Manila amendments, those standards are set for international shipping. All it says is that if I hold a SAMHSA ticket, I'll be able to operate a ship, whether it's in Singapore, Panama, or elsewhere in the world. But the international regime appreciates that countries have their own local issues, so it allows for us to have a localized regime, because those international requirements are quite onerous, meant for high seas operations, etc. So much as we align our requirements to take as much of the international requirements as possible, but we dispense with other non-requirements, as I'm saying, because when you are in Robben Island, your help is very close by. So we still would insist on particular training. We need to be able to navigate in heavy fog. You need to be able to decide to navigate under very extreme conditions, visibility, etc. So those elements are still there in this legislation. And so we are quite comfortable that our legislation would stand to scrutiny. In fact, even the non-Manila elements, we are required by International Maritime Organization to report on those. So even the local conditions and the local requirements are still subject of international approval. So we are quite comfortable with the level at which we regulate. The insurance aspects, again, it follows the same. We were talking amongst ourselves, just in the grouping dealing with this incident, to check why is it not necessary that we went that route. I must be honest, for passenger vessels and these operations, we did not until this stage deem that necessary. We are aware that RIM have got their insurance and P&I, so we do know that they are covered. On an unrelated issue, we've got the fishing industry that we've been under pressure to insist on insurance. So we've gone that route specifically for the fishing industry, and we did not consider that for the passenger industry. That's our ongoing lessons, and we think that it's something to be taken into account. With regards to the questions by Honorable Adams, I think the insurance issue we've dealt with. An unrelated issue that of sunken vessels at other harbors. I thought you could park this question for another day, given the time. Safe to say that we are part of Operation Pakisa, and in there, there's a lab on small harbors development. And in fact, that's why we're raising these issues with RIM as well, because I know that if we should conclude that work, it's going to affect them insofar as what infrastructure, what navigational aids, what authority is used to guide the harbors. But I do know that is being attended to, and I know that Public Works have appointed a service provider to deal with those matters. We are advising them via our special projects as well. The question with the report, ordinarily it takes up to about 6 months to conclude these reports. We did insist that can we not speed things up? The interim report is normally available halfway through that. And we did that when we're doing the presentation, we said 1 month, and our understanding was that we could still provide it within the 3 months, but I still pushed the team to say I want it within 1 month. So it's 1 month since we're putting the presentation together. Will it be made available? We generally are bound by the rules for the country, and PAIA normally forces us to make those things available. And we would take guidance on that. The reason we want to be careful about those investigations is that we use it to teach us what to do in the future. Now, if you make it public, and there are issues of people who want to sue each other, and it becomes a matter of legal navigation, as it were. But as I'm saying, when we get requested to make those reports available, and obviously we would not want to be in the middle of a litigation storms, but we would want to have improved our situations, and my colleague will come in there as well. The Merchant Shipping Act, Honorable Adams, again, we have started a process. The Department of Transport is leading us via Operation Pakisa. There's a big legislative review, and the Merchant Shipping Act, I'm sure you would have seen, the Maritime Transport Policy came via Parliament as well, or maybe it went through Cabinet, not necessarily Parliament. So all of that infrastructure, legal infrastructure that we require, is getting reviewed now, and Merchant Shipping Act would benefit from that. Honorable Raula, we'll talk about, there is a requirement by the operators to keep their own statistics, and we categorize an incident as an event that will lead to loss of life, or that has a potential to. But within that definition, there is a duty to the operator to have their own events log. So some of the events that may have happened in Rim, we may not necessarily be aware of, particularly if they are too minor. So I think they are best placed to answer that. But from our point of view, I'll ask the captain to come in. And maybe the whole issue of detentions and inspections, we are pretty required to make sure that we keep up those standards, and we know we're not always liked when we do that. And we've had ongoing discussions, particularly with RIM in that regard. But we are both state entities. We have a duty to collaborate, but we also have a duty to uphold the safety standards. So it is in that balance that our relationship is found and formed. The question that was asked by Honorable Khawula around the shipmaster misleading could use the word misjudged, not necessarily misleading, but we don't even know if, because our preliminary investigation has not arrived at that. So we cannot answer that question, and that question must be answered by the investigation. The degree of independence, I can assure you that we are very independent, sometimes to the annoyance of many people. But the reason we have to be independent is that our watchdog is not necessarily from South Africa. we are monitored for our actions by international maritime organizations, so we have to explain these things. Very much like aviation are monitored by ICAO, so we are required to keep a particular integrity to the work that we do. Chair, we would appreciate that Joint Transport, Tourism and Arts and Culture Committee, not for this only reason, but we also participate in operation various maritime economy initiatives. Operation Pakisa has given us now the first one, the maritime economy, but they gave us the marine tourism, which we participate in and affects this committee directly. And the small harbor, it looks like it's going to get its own lab. And again, it affects this discussion for today to the extent that there is a harbor in Robben Island. And there are design issues, there are management issues, there are risk elements. We are concerned with all of those things as far as our work is concerned. So maybe it might just be a very good idea, and we would appreciate that. I think that is about it. As I'm saying, it is our intention, and in fact we do have a relationship with Robben Island Museum, and other issues we would prefer that we did not answer them in the committee, because we have a duty to talk to each other. We are their regulators. Thank you very much. Captain, I don't know if there's
anything. Thank you, sir. To... Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think there was just the one question about penalties to the ship owner and or skipper or the master of the vessel. I think that will basically come out after we've done the investigation. If the skipper hasn't conformed with the requirements of our regulations, and even the owner, if he didn't support the skipper in maintaining the vessel in a seaworthy condition, if that should be a problem. But I mean, at the moment, we can't conclusively put blame either to Robben Island or the charterer or the operator, because technically we can only have recourse, or some say can only raise penalties against the operator of the vessel, which is, can either be a fine, which is by means of admission of contravention, which is usually a certain amount of money which they have to pay to SAMHSA. And then I think Honorable Foss also mentioned something about the story going around about the size of the vessel or the weight of the vessel. I think that was a concern, I think, Madam Chair. I think last week sometime I was also at the Western Cape Government Parliamentary Committee, and these same questions came up again. So I would like to raise, just clear that question about, it's not a matter of size of a vessel. For some, sir, and especially when it comes to small vessels, we have to certify the vessel in terms of the regulations. However, I also made the same point. If the operator, like Robben Island, say, no, we don't want these small vessels, these small weights carrying our passengers, and they just want the larger vessels to operate and carry passengers to conform to world standards, then that's their prerogative. SAMHSA cannot enforce that requirement that they have to have bigger vessels to take passengers from point A to point B. And like I said, we also have passenger vessel operators in Hart Bay and also even in Hans Bay, which all use small vessels. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, on that note, let me say it was good for this committee to agree on this type of a meeting, because through it we've gained a lot. Let me also thank the delegation for its positive response to our invitation, both delegations, and also the manner in which we have responded to the concerns raised by the members. SAMHSA, I can say, hands up to the fact that we are doing the job. Do your job the way you are supposed to do. We will also, as the committee, continue to seek answers from you we will also continue to encourage people to visit this heritage site, the Robben Island. Let me, on that note, thank both delegations and also say you can recuse yourselves from the meeting. We are done with you now. We'll be dealing with the inside work on your way out. There is some tea, some refreshments outside there. You can help yourselves. Thank you very much. Honorable members, sorry for the delay, but it was not a waste of time, we can see. In our agenda, we had something on the consideration of the BRRR, which we have adopted with amendments. We had the briefing from the museum, which we have just interrogated. We had SAMHSA. Let me propose that we defer the other remaining items. That is the tabling of the oversight report, that is the tabling of the committee program, and also the minutes of the PrisVF's meeting. Let me thank you. Enjoy your weekend. The meeting stands adjourned. Thank you.